Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Throwback Podcast. This is your host, Ryan the Potman.
And me, Jimmy the Green Ranger, Daddy. Woo!
Jimmy, why are you dressed like a Power Ranger?
What do you mean I'm dressed up, Daddy? I'm the Green Ranger. I just came to Angel Grove fighting serious crimes.
Oh, really? What kind of crime would that be?
Oh, I'll tell you exactly what I did, Daddy. I made a trip to the busiest Target in Angel Grove, and I stopped these two teenagers from parking in a handicap spot.
And did they listen?
Of course they did, Daddy. I'm the Green Ranger. They were having such a good time laughing, they accidentally hit me with a cup of Starbucks.
Something tells me that was no accident, buddy. You guys are going to have to excuse Jimmy. He's excited about our guest for this episode. On today's episode, we have the original Zordon from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, David Fielding, as our guest. I really think you guys are going to enjoy this episode if you're a big fan of the Power Rangers. What the hell?
Oh, you excuse me, Mr. Podman. I'm gonna go to the command center now.
Shouldn't you be teleporting then?
Oh no, Daddy! You don't need to teleport to the command center. It's right here, Daddy.
Jimmy, Mr. Green Ranger, that's the bathroom.
No, that's the command center. Now, if you excuse me, I must meet with the others.
And he's just locked himself in the bathroom, folks. Okay. Well, guys, I really hope you enjoyed this interview. This was a really fun one to do and one you will really enjoy. As always, if you like what you hear, be sure to check us out on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts for more exclusive interviews, as well as dropping us a line at Twitter at ThrowPodcast or on Instagram at Throwback_podcast. Now, here's our exclusive interview with the original Zordon from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, David Fielding.
You are listening to the Throwback Podcast, your stop for everything 90s. This is a Throwback exclusive.
Joining me at this time is the original Zordon from the original series, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I'm pleased to welcome David Fielding. David, how are you?
Good. How are you? Nice to meet everybody.
Thanks for coming on the show. First off, tell us a little bit about yourself. What was your childhood like? Growing up, were you into?
Well, I grew up as part of an Air Force family. We moved around a lot. So it was my mother, my father, my sister, and my brother. And we moved around quite a bit when I was younger. And one of the earliest memories I have is really enjoying Doctor Who and Batman. And so superheroes and the notion of superheroes, I became very well acquainted with very early on in my life. I was once I learned how to read, I learned to read really early. I started school at the age of four.
Oh, wow.
My mother is English. And so we were living in England at the time, and I was going to, I guess, what they consider like their first grade when I was the age of four. So I became very aware of media and literature from a very early age, and I was a big fan of Greek myth and English myth, and read a lot about Hercules and Jason and the Argonauts and Robin Hood and all that sort of thing growing up. So by the time we got back to the States, and I was very familiar with the idea of these superhuman characters and comic books. And so I became very quickly enraptured with stuff like the Avengers or Superman and some of the things that were on television at the time that caught my attention were cartoon programs. Like I remember one called Marine Boy, which is I believe an anime. Also grew up with Ultraman and Godzilla movies. And so, I had a large, knowledge of, the kind of things that were going into, this phenomenon that turned out to be Power Rangers.
Wow. So, like in your spare time, what kind of things do you like to do in your spare time? Like when you have some downtime?
Well, I'm a writer, so a lot of my time is spent thinking about and jotting down ideas for stories and stuff. for recreation, I'm a gamer. Once I left Los Angeles and Hollywood, I moved back to the East Coast of the United States and became involved doing voices for video games, and then got involved in the production and design of video games for about a decade or so.
Okay. For some of the games, like what games were you a part of that some people might know?
Early on in my career with video games, I did voices for a company called DreamForge Entertainment. They were located in Western Pennsylvania. And I did a lot of voices for their Gold Box D&D games that they were doing. I did the voice of Dritz Doerden in Menzo Berenzen. I did voices for their Stone Prophet D&D game. And a couple of the original games that they did. One was Anvil of Dawn, which was a dungeon delver kind of game. And then Sanitarium, which was a psychological horror game where I got to play the villain. So that was a lot of fun. And then once I moved further east outside of Boston, I went to work for Impressions Games and did voices for their city builders, Zeus and Poseidon. And then I got to work for Stainless Steel Studios, who was working on a real-time strategy game called Empire Earth. Mm-hmm. And I did like 90% of the voices in that game. Because it was a real-time strategy game, there was lots of units that you could click on and move around. And anytime any of them would deliver an order or have a death scream or something like that, it was always me that was doing that. And then I got hired by a company called Mad Dog Software, and we did the sequel to Empire Earth. We did the expansion pack for first, and then we did the sequel Empire Earth 2. And I did the help design the quests and dialogue for the sequel to Dungeon Siege, a couple of other games. Some of them that didn't actually make it all the way through the production cycle, they kind of got canceled a lot. But at that time, I was moving much more towards writing stories and telling stories. So I still play a lot of games now, but I'm no longer involved in the gaming industry.
What are you playing right now?
I just can't seem to get enough of Red Dead Redemption 2.
That's a good game. I play that. Yeah.
It's just a really fun. I like games like that. I played a lot of MMOs, starting with EverQuest and then progressing to World of Warcraft. And I basically tried just about any MMO that came down the pike. And I just love how the creators are able to build these worlds that you can immerse yourself in and explore. Unlike a lot of power gamers, my enjoyment from these large, expansive games is just marveling at all the different areas that you can go to, exploring, opening up new vistas and stuff. And I love doing that. And I love the fact that some games reward you for exploring. I think that's really great, because
yeah, that's cool.
So often, you know, many times, especially like Red Dead Redemption, I mean, the game is basically done, you know, at the point of the gun. You shoot everything. That's how you interact with everything. And when designers can come up with different ways for you to interact with the world, I find that very invigorating. So,
yeah. Are you a PlayStation guy or Xbox? Or do you have both?
PlayStation 4.
Yeah, shout out to PlayStation. I've had PlayStation ever since the very first one. I've had it ever since.
Yeah, I had a PlayStation 3, but it got stolen. So it took me a while to replace it, but I finally have a PlayStation.
So. Yeah, I don't blame you. So let's go back. How did you end up landing the role of Zordon on Power Rangers? Like, how did all that happen?
Networking, really. I mean, when I was going to college, I went to my undergraduate, which was Southwest Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas, and I made a lot of good friends there. And when I went on to get my master's degree at the University of Pittsburgh, a lot of those friends from Texas moved out to California. So 3 years later, once I was through with the master's program and went out to California, I had a network of friends out there. And one of my friends from Texas, Stacy Fish, was working on the pilot that they were shooting for, at that time it was called Dino Rangers. And she had called me up and said, would you like to come down to an audition for it? And I had only been in Los Angeles for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And because I got there in August of 92 and we shot the pilot in October of 92. And so I went down to the Saban building and I thought it was going to be like any other catacall audition. There would be 15,000 guys. I would go in, read my lines in front of a camera, and then I would go home and I would never hear anything. But when I got down to the Saban building, I found out it was very unusual because there were only two of us that they had brought in. And they told us that they were going to cast it that day and shoot it the next week. And so I had to sign some paperwork to tell them that, you know, I was available on such and such date or whatever. And then we held the audition and the other gentleman went in first and he did his take and then he left. And then I went in and I met the original cast. I met the director. I met the producers. And then they had me stand up on a table and I basically used the voice in the audition that you hear on the TV show. So,
oh, wow.
And that was it. I got the job.
So you only had to do it one time. You didn't have to keep going back.
Yeah, it's very unusual. Like when you talk to the other Rangers, especially the original cast, those guys went through weeks of auditions. They had a very demanding physical regimen that they had to prove themselves. You know, everybody always asks, well, how do I become a Power Ranger? Well, it's not just the ability to act in front of a camera. You have to have the ability to move and to look good when you move. So they were looking for martial artists or dancers or gymnasts. And so these guys went through some really intense sessions of having to prove that, you know, they could move, they could flip, they could dance, they could do this sort of martial arts stuff that was going to be a big proponent of the show. And so they went through a number of weeks and callbacks and having to work with different groups. And so I don't envy them that. But considering my character was just a head, I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot of physical stuff they needed me to do. So,
yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, Zordon was pretty much a giant floating head in glass. How long did it take to film your scenes usually for episode?
Well, they only filmed the character one time, and then much like the Japanese footage, they just used it over and over and never had
to pay me. So, oh, yeah, like the stock footage, right?
Yeah. And they never had to pay me for it, so it was pretty awesome.
Oh, they never had to pay you for that?
No. Because the show was non-union, we shot the pilot as a non-union pilot. I got paid for that. And then they owned all that footage, so they could do with it whatever they wanted to.
Oh, okay. Wow. Didn't know that. That's interesting.
I made less than $1,000 on the show, so that's pretty good.
That's it?
Yeah.
Zordon, wow. That doesn't sound cool.
Welcome to Hollywood.
Yeah, I guess. So you played Zordon for only, you said only the first season, not even the first season. So I think you told me, what, 31 episodes?
Well, they use my face throughout the life of the character. So whenever Zordon is on the television show, that's my face. But I only did the voice for the first 31 episodes. We shot the pilot in October of 92. And by the time the show went on the air in August of 93, I was done and burned out living in Los Angeles. I was working two jobs. Mm-hmm. I wasn't auditioning. I wasn't doing what I went out there to do. I was a bit homesick. And so I was really sort of, and because of the way the character was filmed, once I got the phone call saying, congratulations, the show got picked up, I was very excited. I was like, great. I'm on a TV show. When do I show up on set? And that's when they let me know that they weren't going to film me anymore. I was just going to be brought in to do voices. And because of the production schedule, when they were, the original cast was, working on the episode 6 days a week, sometimes 16 hours a day, doing all the filming and stuff. So they were in crunch mode doing all that stuff. But I would only get called in like every 5 or 6 weeks to do voices for 3, 4, maybe 5 episodes at a time. And so I felt very disconnected. I was a part of this show that was, they were predicting was going to be, you know, a big deal. And I wasn't seeing it. I couldn't see far enough down the road to understand, you know, what was going to happen. I was much more at that time, like anybody, I was much more concerned with the immediate, you know, problems of paying my rent and getting food on the table and
right.
and that sort of thing. So a few weeks after the show went on the air, I had contacted Tony Oliver and said, listen, I'm going to leave Los Angeles. I'm not very happy living here. And Tony was, he tried very hard to convince me to just stick it out another 6 months. He goes, if you can just hold out for another 6 months, things are going to turn around. And I said, I'm mentally and emotionally spent. I can't do that. And he said, well, let's go talk to Haim. And, one of my only interactions with Haim Saban, was very awesome because, I don't know if you've seen the episode of The Toys That Made Us, but that's pretty much Haim to a T in that show. He's very loud. He's very brash. And I think he was upset that I was thinking of leaving. And because he couldn't understand. He was like, you're part of a hit TV show. And I'm like, well, I'm not really feeling a part of it. And he says, so you don't want to be here? And so I said, it's not that I don't want to be here. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just not happy living in Los Angeles. And he said, fine, we get the new voice. And that was it. And so I left. It wasn't because I hated the show or had any bad feelings. I was just unhappy living in Los Angeles. In hindsight, if I had stuck it out another 6 months, then, you know, who knows what would have happened. But based on the experience I had experiences after I had that I left, I'm okay with it. I'm very happy with the way that my life turned out so far with this. Yeah. So,
yeah, I can understand that. from the short time you were on the show, do you recall anything when you were doing the voices, do you recall any bloopers or behind the scenes things that fans might be interested in? And knowing
there's not many bloopers and stuff that happen in the recording booth. Doing the voice for the character was very interesting because I got to see behind the curtain in a sense about how the show was put together and how they loop the dialogue. And I was also sort of grooming myself to become a writer on the show. I was submitting scripts to Tony Oliver and getting feedback and stuff. And had I stayed another 6 months, there's chances I could have written episodes and stuff for the show. But any sort of bloopers that happen in the recording booth, you can immediately fix. You just tape over it you cut that out or whatever. But I do know that there was some very interesting blooper stuff that would happen on the set. And those stories get told often when we're at conventions and stuff. But I mean, we get to see some of the blooper stuff that happens on the film because we would have to match our voice to what was happening in the action. And so we would get to see, you know, some of the stuff that was happening after they called cut where, you know, they would break character and laugh and all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
But, no real, nothing scandalous to report in the report.
Nothing scandalous. Eh? Yeah. Were you ever approached to play, Zordon in the, Power Rangers movie that came out? I think '95, during the original run of the show, were you ever approached to voice or be Zordon in that movie?
I did receive one phone call where they wanted to know where I was and if I would be available. At that time, they were planning on filming it in Los Angeles. And so I did receive a phone call asking me what my current situation was, would I be available to travel back if need be, blah, blah, blah. But then I never heard anything ever again. And then found out later, in order to save money, which was a big thing with Saban, was, you know, if they can get away with whatever they could get away with, they would. So in order to save money, they filmed it in Australia, which was a non-union. Because if they had filmed it in Los Angeles, the union, the SAG, would have said, you need to make this a union movie, which would have caused the film to cost a lot more to make and so forth and so on.
Right.
And of course, when they filmed it in Australia, they just cast a local actor down there to play the character, which is why Zordon in the movie doesn't look like Zordon from the TV show.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of kids noticed that right away when they saw the movie. Yeah. I know I did. Say, wait, that's not Zordon. Oh, wait, maybe it is. But do you, from your time doing the voices on the show as Zordon and on stuff, do you have a particular, like, favorite episode or moment from, not even from work you've done, like, from, like, did you actually watch the show? Like,
I watched it, I had to do homework, I had to catch up. I had, because in 2011, shortly after Facebook went live, and for whatever reason, I would get these very infrequent messages from people asking me if I was the David Fielding that played Zordon on Power Rangers.
Right.
So once I started to get asked that, I went back and I started to do research, because at that point I was like, that show's still on the air? And was very surprised to learn that, you know, they had filmed like so many different seasons and had gone through quite a number of different Rangers.
Yeah, I think they're still around, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're doing Beast Morphers right now, and I think they're holding auditions for the next season. I mean, it's still going on, and which is great. So I had to go back and do homework, and I had to go back and rewatch episodes and pull out the old VHS tapes that I got from my time out there and take a look at them. And I mean, my favorite part about playing Zordon is always, and it's going to sound really cheesy, it's always the first episode, because Zordon is the one that calls them Power Rangers for the first time. He tells them all about their powers.
Right, yeah.
You know, he tells them about the power coins, and he gives them the choice to say, you know, it's up to you whether or not you want to do this. And what's very interesting is that the Rangers decline. They say, no, that's okay. Well, you know, I've got things to take care of. And it's only when they get attacked by the putties that they take Zordon up, and they use their morphers and they transform and they fight back. And so there's a lot of very smart moments from this very cheesy show that I think a lot of people didn't pick up on. But the more you look at it, and I don't want to say that Power Rangers is something that's really deep, because it isn't, but there are some very interesting choices that were made that really put the power of agency and choice in the hands of the kids playing the Rangers. And I think that's a really good lesson for kids that are watching it to understand that it's up to you. You can do it if you want to. And I think that's a great message.
It is. It really is. You know, an interesting thing about the Power Rangers is the not many people know this, but the command center, the actual command center, was actually a building on a California university campus. I'm not sure which campus it was, but it was. I was doing some research, and the command center was actually a campus for a California university, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's called the House of the Book, and it's in Simi Valley, and it's still there. You can I think they actually had stopped tours for a while because they had so many people that would show up and try to take pictures and stuff there, because it is still a private university or whatever. But I myself still haven't gotten out there. I need to get out there and get myself a picture in front of it at least once.
So. Oh, you never took a
no.
No, been to the command center?
Well, when I was out in California for the last Power Morphicon in 2018, they were going to take a bus tour out there, and I was going, oh man, I should get on that bus tour. But I missed it, and I'm kind of glad I did because the bus broke down before they got there. But but yeah, at some point I need to get out there and get my picture taken in front of it. So.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, Zordon's that bitch at the command center. That's not right. So you said you've been watching back doing your research on the old, like all the other episodes of Power Rangers. What do you think of the other other variations of Power Rangers, like Turbo, Zeo, Time Force, compared to the original series, original cast?
Well, I mean, what's interesting is that the show still follows the same formula from 93. They take the footage from the Sentai that's still being filmed in Japan and then working that in with an American storyline. Or a Western storyline. I mean, the show is filmed in New Zealand. So, I mean, they still, you know, use that tried and true formula of mixing the American story with the Sentai footage. It has gotten better over time. If you go back and you watch the original episodes, they're very simple. They're very, very basic. Everything is, the characters are not quite three-dimensional. They're always pretty much the same. They don't grow very much. The exception being, of course, Bulk and Skull. Bulk and Skull are the two characters in the series that have this amazing arc where they start off as one thing and then they end up something else. And I'm of the belief that you know, the original show would not be what it is without the Bulk and Skull. They're the heart of the show. And their characters are very much from a long tradition, you know, way before vaudeville, of you know, the bumbling villains that add, you know, comic relief. I think the writing for the shows has gotten better. I think the storylines for the shows have gotten a little bit better. The audience that was enamored of the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is all grown up now. They're in their late 20s, 30s, mid-30s, yeah, and have children of their own. And so their expectations about what the show should be and how it should be done, I mean, go on any Power Rangers fan sites, or if you go on Twitter and look at all the raging debates about MMPR versus Turbo or whatever. I mean, it's a very passionate fan base about how they feel about the show and what the show means to them and so forth and so on. Right. Any show is only as good as its writers and its showrunners want it to be. And of course, with Power Rangers, they're sort of limited in a way. They cannot tell these really dark, grim stories because it's basically a show for 7-year-olds to help, you know, promote the toy line and stuff. I mean,
yeah,
the show is a 22-minute commercial for toys, or at least that's, you know.
If you think about it, really is.
And I think the later seasons did a better job of dealing with inter-ranger conflict, with these sort of clashing personalities that learn to get along with one another and so forth and so on. And of course, there are a lot of fans who champion some of the seasons that came after MMPR and, you know, talk about their production quality and so forth and so on. And don't really address the point that, you know, those shows wouldn't be around if it wasn't for the original MMPR. And Mighty Morphin was the touchstone that started this big tidal wave of introducing American audiences to Sentai and stuff. I mean, I really enjoy some of the other seasons. I mean, Power Rangers in Space is good. Time Force is excellent.
I'm sorry. Did you watch the movie that came out, the newest Power Rangers movie that came out, I think, 2 years ago? Did you ever watch that one?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a really good job. I thought they captured what it was about the notion of a Power Ranger and that sort of thing. I really liked what they did with the character of Zordon, the way that he could move back and forth, because it made him much more dynamic. It made him much more of a living entity rather than just this sort of static floating head that didn't really move or whatever. The interesting thing about the Zordon character is that he cannot physically help the Power Rangers. He never leaves the command center. He never intervenes on their behalf. He doesn't have any sort of projectiles that he can throw down to help them or whatever like that. He is basically a hands-free mentor that basically tells them, you know, at least from the TV show, not so much in the 27 movie, but in the TV show, he was basically like, I know you can do this. You know you can do this. Get out there and do that. And he's a very caring entity. I really enjoyed that they played with that in the 2017 movie and made Zordon kind of a jerk. Because he's so focused on solving the problem. He's so focused on defeating Rita that he can't see what actually needs to happen, and it's only after Billy's sacrifice that he redeems himself and accepts his role as mentor and has a sacrifice of his own in order to bring the team together. So I thought that was really good. I thought the Zords were too small. I wish they.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Larger. They. I missed my Goldar.
I was about to say that. That was not Goldar. I don't know what that was.
I wanted my big flying monkey. I thought Kerrigan is one of my favorite people. His crusty Goldar voice is one of my favorite things ever. I missed Goldar. I thought Elizabeth Banks was super scary as Rita, so I thought that was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
I thought the use of the song Stand By Me when they're carrying Billy back to the command center was very touching. And I missed them using more of the music. The Power Rangers theme comes in there very briefly, and then it goes away. I wish we would have heard more of that rocking guitar riff that everybody is so familiar with. So.
And I did like the cameo at the end from Amy Jo Johnson and Jason David Frank at the end there.
it was nice to see them, but I felt like they were sort of not used well enough. To just see them smiling and taking photos and stuff on their phone, it was great that they acknowledged them, but...
I know what you mean. Yeah, I thought they could have done more with that too.
Yeah, it was
good to see him.
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of other characters that I think that they could have had, you know, sprinkled about the town that could have, you know, added some nostalgia for the old fans. But you know, the way the studios and budgets work, I mean, some of those things don't work out. So
yeah, that's true. I guess not. I think we talked a little bit about this, but like, in case some fans still probably don't know, but a lot of the battle scenes on the show were stock footage from the original Japanese show Super Sentai, which I think is pretty cool. How did you like the original Super Sentai?
Well, I mean, I grew up watching Ultraman and Spectreman, so I was very familiar with all that stuff, and it didn't seem strange or odd to me. I completely bought into it. I thought the uniforms were very cool. I mean, I watched the G-Force cartoon when it was on in the early 80s, and without ever actually visiting the country, I liked watching stuff from Japan because it was always so there was an element of wackiness to it that really appealed to me. They were not afraid to do these sort of like really strange concepts and then just have everything make sense. I mean, when you look at Spider-Man, which is the Spider-Man thing that they did where Spider-Man isn't bitten by a spider, but he's given these powers by an alien. He has a big giant robot car and he tells his villains he's going to send him to hell. I mean, you know, it just all makes sense in the Japanese vision of things. And so, you know, seeing these guys in these color coordinated outfits and dinosaurs coming, you know, mechanical dinosaurs coming up out of the ground, I thought, yeah, sure, why not? That's awesome. So, you know, I loved dinosaurs when I was like 5 or 6 and knew all the names of them. And Iguanodon and Triceratops were my favorite dinosaurs. So being associated with a show that had dinosaurs in it and, you know, dinosaurs were made out of metal. And then we were in the same hour of television as the X-Men cartoon. I was like, yeah, that's awesome. That's very cool.
That's badass right there. Yeah. Do you ever get recognized on the streets for being Zordon?
No.
No, never?
The only time I ever get recognized is like if I'm near the convention center where the convention is going on, because the fans are there to see people. And if they see you and they know who you are, then, you know, they call out your name. But if I'm walking down the street in, say, Chicago, nobody knows who I am.
Oh, that's interesting. How do you like going to doing the Comic Cons and meeting the fans?
It's very surreal. It's very cool, and it's really awesome to be a part of something that's a pop culture phenomenon. It's very interesting to watch it from the other side of the rope. I love stuff growing up. I love Star Trek. I watched Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, The Incredible Hulk, Captain America is my favorite superhero. So to be told that I was going to be sitting at a table at a convention where people were going to come meet me and sign autographs, it was very, very surreal 5 years ago to be invited to do one of the things. And it was even more surreal to know that I was going to be, you know, in the same room with some of these people that I had watched on television, and that I get to go to dinner with people like Lou Ferrigno and John Rhys-Davies and Doug Jones and just all of these people that, you know, I might have admired from a distance. And now I'm sitting across the table from them is very surreal. It's also very humbling in the fact that you get to hear why these people want to talk to you, because as an actor, it's just a job. You go in there, you do your lines, you try to do your best performance and, you know, hopefully make something that tells a great story and, you know, might motivate some people or inspire some people. And then to hear how the show has personally affected people, how it's taught them lessons, how it's inspired them to be better. To me, that's very humbling, and I'm very grateful to be a part of that and to be able to share other people's lives that I would never, you know, if I had done something different, I never would have met them. The show is something that spans the world. It's been, you know, in 40 different countries in 40 different languages. And I was in Jakarta, Indonesia, and people there knew the show. They sung the theme song. They were so happy to meet us, went down to Lima, Peru, and the people there were just amazing. So I, it was in Dublin, Ireland, and Belfast, Ireland. And it's just amazing to be able to travel the world and to meet people that watched me do something that I filmed one day, 25, 26 years ago, is pretty humbling, flattering. So,
yeah, it's a pretty cool deal there. I was going to say, well, you hear about all these reboots coming out now with stuff like, I would always be interested in our original Power Rangers reboot with the original cast as adults. I think that'd be cool if it had like a more adult-oriented storyline with the original cast for the people that grew up watching the original series. I think that'd be something that'd be cool to do. I don't know if it'll be ever possible to do, but I think it'd be something that a lot of people would be interested in doing.
I do think there's a great deal of interest for that. I don't think it's as large as most people think it is. And the number of people that it would appeal to, I don't think justifies actually getting it made. And I'm not saying that to poo-poo the idea or anything like that. I'm just, you know, looking at it from a very realistic perspective. There's also the logistical problem of, can you get all these people back together? Some of them have moved on and have voice that it would take quite a, it would take quite a bit for them to come back.
Yeah, that's a good point you're bringing up right there. Because some of the cast have moved on to other things, and it'll probably take a lot for them just to commit to doing something that like that.
Yeah, nostalgia is a very, very interesting thing, and it's the it's
Well, let me ask you this. If something like that, would you be interested in something like that or no?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it all depends on what they would come up with as a story for it to make sense.
Yeah, that's true,
What I
right?
would what I would hope they would do is to take the Boom Comics Shattered Grid storyline and make that an animated movie, and then bring everybody back to do the voices. So that way, you get the cast from the original show. With a much more updated modern story that has a lot of drama, has a lot of pathos
That's
there.
actually a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because we got to do a live stage reading of the Shattered Grid storyline at PowerMorphicon in 2018, and it just blew the audience away to be able to see myself as Zordon and Barbara Goodson as Rita Repulsa conversing with each other back and forth in real time was really magical. And so, you know, if they could capture something like that in an animated movie, I think it would be great.
I agree. That would be something. Never really saw the Power Rangers in like an anime. So you see live action, but you never seen them in an animated
Yeah, and
situation like that.
You look at the comics, some of the art for that, you know, there's an anime influence to it, and the way the panels just leap off the page, and they really capture the angularity and the swiftness of the combat and stuff. It's really, really cool.
Do you have a favorite Power Ranger? Does Zordon have a favorite Power Ranger, I should say?
As Zordon, my answer is I cannot have a favorite Power Ranger. They're all chosen for a reason. They're all very important and very vital. So I don't think Zordon places one ranger above any other. I identified with Billy because I was nerdy in high school. I had glasses. I was a bookworm, and I knew a lot of large words when I was younger, so I identified with Billy, and the Triceratops was one of my favorite dinosaurs.
Yeah, you said
So
it was one of your favorites. Yeah,
yeah,
okay, yeah.
so
That's
yeah.
pretty cool. I always thought Zordon was partial to Jason and Tommy for some reason. I don't know.
Well, I think the way that whole thing played out, because if you watch the original Sentai, Zoo Ranger Sentai, the Green Ranger character in that dots, he is killed or whatever. So, you know, the original Japanese Sentai was a little bit darker, and so, you know, they had to be very careful, and, you know, with the American audience and not allow anything like that. But I think the popularity of the character really, you know, took off for them, and so they had to find a way to bring Tommy back or to keep Tommy in the fold. And it's really interesting how many fans gravitate towards that character, because when you look at the Green Ranger, I mean, here's a character who is as strong as all the other Rangers, and you know, he trashes the command center and beats the ball, and it takes them 5 episodes to solve the problem. And
that's actually my favorite out of the whole the original. That's that whole 5-part series is my favorite. The whole story.
I think it's that mythic arc of, you know, abusing power, understanding the lesson of it, having a fall. And I think it's the redemption of Tommy that everybody really likes. Personally, I find it a little troubling that so many people want to be evil Green Tommy, because they're attracted to the power of that. The sort of gloating violence that Tommy has in those first couple of episodes where he beats everybody. Because, you know, a lot of people that I talk to in conventions and stuff, they want to become a Power Ranger. You know, how do I get to be a Power Ranger? You know, they're very sort of attracted to the idea of being able to solve problems through physicality. And the transformation from something from somebody who's weak to somebody who's powerful is very attractive to them. And it, you know, it's a little troubling to me that they gravitate towards evil Tommy, the same way that they sort of gravitate towards Draken, who's the evil version of Tommy in the comics. You know, travels through the dimension and destroys Rangers, so you know he can be the last one or whatever. It's a very interesting and discussion worthy topic to talk about. Why is Tommy attractive? Why is the Green Ranger so attractive? It doesn't hurt things that Jason David Frank is a good looking guy, and I think that had a lot to do with it too. And you know, he had the long hair and he was the bad boy, and so I mean they hit a lot of the right notes with that character, that you know, to appeal to 8 and 9 year olds at the time. And the fact that he had, you know, the Dragon Zord, which was one of the amazing Zords that they had on the show. That thing rising up out of the ocean was just fantastic.
When he played that flute, you knew it was going down.
The fact that he could play the flute through a helmet didn't matter. You know, he was going to do it anyway. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot going on there. And that's why I say, you know, that there's a lot of smart things about Power Rangers, even though it is this very cheesy show. Like I said, it's not deep at all, but there are some very smart things going on inside of it. So
yeah, it is. So before we wrap this up, you have any final words for the fans of the show or viewers over the years that you want to talk to them about?
I have a book. It's a paranormal urban fantasy called Glimms. It's the first book in a trilogy. So you know, I don't know if a lot of fans know that I'm a writer, but I have a page on Amazon that people can go find to find short stories and other books that I've written.
It's been an honor having you on the show today. Talk about Power Rangers. Power Rangers was like, we touched on this before. It was like one of the biggest shows for, I think, just kids in general around that time.
Yeah.
Them and like Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles. I think those were the like top two superheroes around that time.
Well, I mean, you know, when you go to these conventions and you see the different types of cosplay, the three cosplays that I see more often than anything else is Star Wars, Star Trek, and Power Rangers. It's sort of like this triumvirate that happens all over the place. So,
yeah, that's cool. You ever see anyone dressed up like Zordon?
I actually have, my first Power Morph Con in 2014, I saw the best Zordon cosplay I've ever seen.
How does that work?
if you do an image search on Google and you type in Zordon cosplay, it should come up. There, this young man had, he had built the command center that he would hold in his hands. He had a plastic tube that would be in front of his face. He had his face painted blue, and he had like action figures of all the Rangers out in front of him in the command center. And then he had a buddy that was dressed up as Alpha 5 walking around with him. So that to me was like really super amazing. And I actually got to wear it. He took it off and allowed me to put it on, and I did the voice through it, and it just, you know, it made his day. So that was pretty awesome.
That's awesome. That's great. But yeah, just wanted to say thanks for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you. All the best in the future.
All right. Great to talk to you, Ryan.
I want to send a special thanks to David Fielding for stopping by on the Throwback. It's great reflecting back on this great show. Power Rangers inspired so many kids growing up. There have been so many different versions of them over the years, but there is just something magical about the original incarnation of the Power Rangers. Thinking back, what were some of your favorite moments from the show? Who were some of your favorite Power Rangers? You know, for me, I love Tommy as the White Ranger. The Tiger Zord was awesome. The way it would just run and...
Give me back my morpher, Jason!
You gotta be kidding me. Jimmy, what the hell are you doing in there?
Oh, I'm sick of you holding me back, Daddy. Just because you're the Red Ranger doesn't make you the leader. I can't help it if Kimmy's more attracted to me. Oh, you want to throw down, Daddy? Have some of these knuckle sandwiches right here.
That's it. I'm opening this door, all right? Oh, what did you do? This whole bathroom is a mess. The studio is already not happy with us, you know, with all this messes we've made, or should I say all the messes you have made over the episodes we've been doing. There's shaving cream on the ceiling. Why is there a Red Ranger action figure clogged in the toilet?
Oh, I wanted to show that Jason who was Bob. That lack his attitude.
It's an action figure. Wait, where are you going? You gotta clean this up, man.
If you excuse me, I must go summon the dragons or to take me to Walgreens.
The Green Ranger didn't have a harmonica. You know, whatever. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Throwback. We have a big surprise for everyone as our guest on the next edition of the Throwback. Be sure to stay tuned to find out who. Until next time, goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Twitter at Throw Podcast or on the web at www.blogtalkradio.com/throwback.